Yatra shamapadan yubayato nabhivir Vrishat chakrai chakranare namasharit prabha pravara sarvata pavitre karote. Yatra. Where? Ashramapadani. All hermitages. Ubayataha. Both on top and below. Nabhihi. Like the symbolic mark of a navel. Drishat. Visible. Chakrahi. With the circles. Chakranadi. The Chakranadi River. Generally known as the Gandaki. Nama. Of the name. Saritpravara. The most important river of all. Sarvataha. Everywhere. Pavitri Karoti. Sanctifies. So translation. In Pulaha Ashram is the Gandaki River, which is the best of all rivers. The Shalagram, Shila, the marble pebbles purify all those places. And each and every marble pebble, up and down, circles like navels, are visible. So you can repeat. In Pulaha Ashram is the Gandaki River, which is the best of all rivers. The Shalagram Shila, the marble pebbles, purify all those places. On each and every marble pebble, up and down, circles like navels are visible. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shalagam Shila refers to pebbles that appear like stones with circles marked up and down. They are available in the river known as Gandaki Nadi. Wherever the waters of this river flow, the place becomes immediately sanctified. So, Om Gana Timbadanda Shah. Granjana shlakaya chakshurun meditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, of course, here it's been described the Shalagram Shila, which is definitely Lord Vishnu. We have deities in different temples of the Lord, and the deities are installed. During the installation ceremony, the devotees of the Lord, under the jurisdiction of a pure devotee, because Prabhupada comments that only a pure devotee can call the Lord to appear. And of course, the Lord is able to transform the material elements into spiritual and vice versa if he wants to do. Because as Prabhupada describes, that Krishna is like an expert electrician who can change the electrical energy from heating to cooling or cooling to heating. So in the same way, all these energies that we have are actually Krishna's energies, and Krishna can transform each energy into spiritual material. He can even transform your body into a spiritual body, which is interesting. Of course, generally that means that if we engage our body 24 hours a day in Krishna's service, our body becomes spiritualized. Like Prabhupada said, if you put an iron rod into fire, the iron rod becomes hotter, 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 and eventually becomes fire. But sometimes there are certain instances in the Vedic literatures where Krishna transforms the devotee's self-same body into a completely spiritual body, and the devotee doesn't even have to leave his body. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's one example. that Sarupya, that is Gopakumar, who was previously Gopakumar, was preaching to a Mathura Brahmana. And this Mathura Brahmana, it's interesting too, because this Mathura Brahmana was previously a devotee of Durga. And Durga is an expansion of Radharani, which is interesting. And so he was given by Durga the Gopal mantra, the eight-syllable Gopal mantra, the same mantra that was chanted by Gopakumar, who became Sarupa. And he was chanting this mantra. Actually, he was given the mantra when he was asking for some material benefit. And he chanted the mantra and he actually forgot about his material aspirations, which is interesting. Because when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, if we chant properly, even if we have some motivation in the beginning, that motivation becomes purified, so we become to the point of simply wanting Krishna's lotus feet. As Krishna says in the Gita, Chaturvidha Bhajanti Mam. Four types of people approach me. They want wealth, they're inquisitive, you know, they want knowledge, or they want freedom from distress. So by chanting, as Dhruva Maharaj did also, that's another example of that, then one actually becomes free of any ulterior motive. Ulterior means like motive that's different from pure devotional service, you know, personal, self-centered. Just like we say, if someone has an ulterior motive, let's say someone is the treasurer in the temple and they're taking a cut of the money, that's called an ulterior motive. You understand? That they're doing their service, but they're taking a little bit from Krishna. That's an ulterior motive. So when one chants, one gives up those ulterior motives. So we find this is very common. So this Brahmin, getting back to the story, is the Brahmin, Mathura Brahmin. He chanted the mantra given by Durga, and he gave up, basically he gave up all of his different motivations, and he simply wanted to be Krishna conscious. And ultimately, Srimati Radharani, of whom Durga is an expansion, ordered Gopakumar to come down to the earth planet, to Vrindavan, because Gopakumar would generally commute between Gokul and Goloka. This is a long commute, actually. It's like people complain that they're commuting 1 hour a day to work, but imagine commuting like from Goloka to Gokul. But anyway, he did. But he was able to travel at the spiritual speed, so it didn't take much time. It was better than one of those bullet trains in Japan. They go like 200 miles an hour. So anyway, he came down to preach the Mathura Brahmin, told the Mathura Brahmin his life history. And basically what happened is, after he told the Mathura Brahmin his life history, the whole story of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the Mathura Brahmin still hadn't achieved absolute purity. You know, he liked the story. It was a nice story, you know, it's really inspiring, but he really hadn't achieved that purity yet. So then what he did, Gopakumar did, is he actually touched the Mathura Brahmin, I think, on the head. And the Mathura Brahmin's body immediately became transformed into a spiritual body without him having to give up his body. And then all of a sudden, they heard the sound of a flute. And we all know who plays the flute. And Krishna came, and Krishna was very pleased and fainted, of course, as he saw his devotee who just became pure and embraced the Mathura Brahmin. And so that's one story about how there was no need to change the body. It's pretty interesting. I mean, we'd all like to have that particular benediction, isn't it? It's pretty painful to give up the body, so Krishna changed my body. Of course, when Krishna changes the body, it doesn't look exactly the same as it does now. You know, it's not that you keep your big nose or anything. When Krishna changes the body, you assume it's like morphine. You know what morphine is? I have this thing on the computer that you take two pictures of someone. And, you know, generally you do this to preach Krishna consciousness. You take a picture of someone and you take a picture of your dog. and you show, you understand what I'm talking about? Then you show the person how he's going to become a dog in his next life. I did that to one disciple. I never heard from her again. So, yeah, she was too attached to her dog. Anyway, so, I have to learn when proper discrimination. After so many years in the Hare Krishna movement, I still haven't learned. So it's like that when one Krishna just like transforms your body. It's pretty interesting, isn't it? And that's a very rare occurrence. I mean, there's other instances like Dhruva Maharaj stepping up on the airplane. And also Gopa Kumara's body was transformed too. Gopa Kumara, who's Sarupa, his body was transformed. So generally, you have to give up your body. So let's get back to the point. The point is in the deity worship, you take these elements, such as marble or even sand, because there's actually temporary deities too, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, or even the mind, which is a subtle material element, and you can install, you can actually manifest Krishna in his original spiritual form with these material elements. They become transformed, just like I mentioned Krishna is able to transform, in rare instances, the devotee's body into spiritual body without the devotee having to leave his body. In the same way, Krishna can transform, because actually has to be done by a pure devotee, can transform the marble or whatever it is into spirit. And then the deity is directly Krishna. I mean, it's amazing how Krishna can do that. Also, it's also with the books too. That's why Prabhupada said we respect these spiritual literatures. We don't. One time Prabhupada said if the book falls on the floor of a picture of the spiritual master or Krishna, you touch it with your feet, you have to offer obeisances like 1,000 times. You remember that? You know, because it's Krishna. Directly, 100% Krishna. I mean, we have to maintain our mood of reverence. Okay. So getting back to the point here is the Shalagram Shilas are not installed. Not like other deities that you install them. Also, the Govardhan Shilas are not installed. I mean, Govardhan is directly Krishna. Prabhupada said it's part of Krishna's transcendental body. It's like you have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he got the Govardhan Shilas, he would hold them to his heart, he would cry, you know. Of course, he would bathe the Govardhan Shilas with his tears. Don't try that. That might be offensive if you start crying and then the tears fall on the Govardhan Shilas, because you don't have a spiritual body and your tears are actually contaminated. As much as we love our tears, a veil of tears, they're contaminated. So it's like sneezing with the eyes. So, as far as the contamination is concerned. So the Govardhan Shila, Shalagram Shila. Actually, it's interesting. Prabhupada, I hope I'm not offending anybody with this, but one time Prabhupada was asked about a Dwarka Shila, and Prabhupada said, it's not bona fide. And, you know, there's a statement by Prabhupada said, you can use it as a paperweight. Because it's not, Prabhupada said that. You know, I'm just repeating what Prabhupada said. But, you know, devotees have all these different shilas they get from different places now. And, you know, we have a Hillsborough shila. I'm just joking. So you really have to make sure that it's something that's authorized by your guru. You know, the guru says this is bona fide. The Vedic literatures say it's bona fide. You can't just come up with, you know, a Kurukshetra Shila or a Tirupati. Well, actually, Tirumala, it's interesting. Tirumala is the hill, is an incarnation of Lord Vishnu. It's like the Govardhan of South India. So that, you know, you can have it. And that's why Sripad Ramanujacharya, when he went to see Balaji on Tirumala, he climbed up on his knees. He didn't you know, Tirumal is a hill. And when I climbed the hill, it took me 2 hours, but I was really trucking, as they say. You know, trucking means like running up the hill. Me and Kavi Chandra Maharaj. He's good for trucking too. So, we actually saw some devotees going up on their knees, and we were going up the hill. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I don't think I could do that. I mean, I wouldn't be able to walk for a long time afterwards if I tried that. But somehow they tied their feet to their thigh or something like that, so they were able to walk on their knees all the way up the hill. Pretty intense, isn't it? I didn't see them have knee pads. I think he just walked on his knees. And he came up just like half hour after us. And that's amazing, isn't it? But Sripad Ramanuja, another thing is Sripad Ramanujacharya, this is interesting. When he went up to Tirumala, he didn't eat or drink the whole time because he didn't want to, you know, evacuate or pass urine because it was Lord, he considered it to be Lord Vishnu. He didn't want to do it up there on the hill. Isn't it interesting? So that hill's actually, and of course, there's different hills in Vrindavan that are incarnations like Lord Shiva, like Nandishwara Hill, Nandagram, you have like that. The hills in Vrindavan are actually very spiritual. Of course, the ground in Vrindavan is very spiritual too. All the sand is like Chintamani. So people don't appreciate that, and they become very much complacent when they're dealing with the holy Dham. So getting back to the point of the Shalagram Shila, because I wanted to talk a little bit about that. The Shalagram Shila is always Vishnu. And according to the impressions on the stone that are made by the worms in the Gandaki River, then they're considered different forms of Lord Vishnu. Of course, you have the Sringa Shila, the Vamana Shila, Varaha Shila, Gopal Shila, and the experts are able to describe the different manifestations of the Lord that are present within that Shila. So the Shalagram Shila has to be worshipped very, very carefully. And Prabhupada gave one Bengali statement about the Shalagram Shila. He said that if one doesn't have the right attitude when worshipping the Shalagram Shila, then his worship is like using the Shalagram Shila to crack nuts with, as a Bengali saying. In other words, if one tries to achieve some materialistic thing or use the deity for their, you know, money-making, whatever it is, then it's like using the Shalagram Shila to crack nuts, you know, which is extremely offensive. It's like taking the Lord's transcendental self and then cracking nuts with him. Then you will become a nut by doing that. So the story about the Shalagram Shila, and that's what I actually wanted to get to, is very interesting. It involves Lord Narayan getting cursed by Tulsi. So here's the story. Once upon a time, that Tulsi, who was an impartial expansion, Srimati Radharani, was associating with Krishna. And Krishna was very intimate with her. And Srimati Radharani got very angry. And she cursed Tulsi to be born in the earth planet, in this material world, which is indeed a curse to be born in this material world. We think it's a benediction. Especially to be born in America, we think that's a blessing. It's interesting. And so Krishna said, don't worry, you will take birth in India. At least she wasn't born in America. You will take... that would have been bad. You know, that was a worse curse. So you will take birth in India and you'll marry my expansion, Narayan. And then also you had Krishna's coward boy associate, Sudam, who was cursed by Srimati Radharani. The reason is that Krishna was flirting again. He has this terrible habit of flirting with different girls. Not only flirting, I mean, he goes beyond that. So Krishna was flirting with this girl, Viraja, who later on became the Viraja River. And Radharani became very angry with her, and Radharani cursed her to become the river. So then Radharani got angry with Krishna and started chastising him. She's the only one who can get away with that. And actually her associates too, like Lalita and Vishakha, they also. Vishakha not so much, but Lalita, she's very hot-headed. And she chastises. Whereas Vishakha, she's more into conflict resolution. Whenever Krishna wants to make peace with Radharani, he calls for Vishakha, not Lalita. Because Vishakha's cool-headed. Lalita's hot-headed. I mean, in a spiritual way. We're not saying that as a criticism, of course. So, anyway, so what happened is that Radharani was chastising Krishna. Krishna didn't say anything. Because he understands that, you know, when Radharani chastises, you don't talk back. It's a mistake, because it gets worse. He doesn't make an excuse. Well, I was just walking on the road, and I happened to see her. It was an honest mistake. And actually, that's a good hint. When you get chastised by a superior, don't make excuses. Just sit there humbly, accept it, and say, you know, what changes I have to make in life. But Krishna, of course, never makes any changes. So Krishna was silent, but you know, when Krishna gets offended, of course, I'm not really offended, but when Krishna gets treated roughly, then sometimes his coward boyfriends get a little angry. So Sudama, he got angry at Radharani, and he chastised her. And she said, well, you're not going to get away with this. I'm cursing you to be born in the womb of a Danavi. Danavi is feminine for Danava. And Sudam, he was crying, you know, please, don't allow this to happen. Radharani said, don't worry, in a half a moment you will return. Because it's a fact that the time experience in the local Vrindavan, the spiritual world, is completely different. I mean, compared to the time in this material world. Like one moment of Lord Brahma is a year in this earth, on this earth planet, and then when you go higher and higher to the spiritual world, it's like one quadrillionth of a second in the spiritual world is like thousands and thousands of years on this earth planet. So your time is experienced quite differently. Anyway, so therefore Sudam was cursed, and Tulsi Devi was cursed. So then Tulsi Devi was born from this couple named Dharmadvaja and Madhavi. And it's described in the Vedic literature. She's considered, well, she is Tulsi Devi in the spiritual world, but also a manifestation of Lakshmi. And she spent 100 years in the womb of her mother. Her bodily features are described. She has lotus flowers on her feet. Her eyes were like lotuses. Her lips were bimba. And for you Westerners, you don't understand what that means. That means reddish. You understand? Reddish. She didn't, like in the Western world, the ladies put on this lipstick because their lips are all cracked and whatever. You know, so, anyway, whatever. So they have to decorate themselves. And also her palms and soles were red, so she didn't have to put on anything on her palms and soles. Navel was deep. She had a halo and a complexion like a champaka flower. So she didn't need any powder like the ladies, but, you know. It's a base for the, you know, there's so many things. A base for the makeup, then another. What is another layer and another layer, and finally they look half decent. So, So those who have spiritual bodies, they always look good. And even if they wear earrings and things like that, it's that their body beautifies the ornaments rather than the ornaments beautifying the body. You understand? So it's a little bit different. So she became very determined to get Krishna as her husband. So she performed austerities for 100,000 celestial years. That's probably billions of years of the earth time. And for 20,000 years, she ate fruits and water. 30,000 years, dried leaves. 40,000 years, air. 10,000 years, nothing, and stood on one leg to get Krishna as her husband. Fortunately, this is Kali Yuga. All we have to do is chant Hare Krishna. If this was a different yuga, that's what you would have to do to become a pure devotee. Can you imagine standing on one leg? I mean, I get out of balance after 10 seconds on one leg. Can you imagine 10,000 years on one leg and eating nothing? I mean, after 4 hours, I'm ready to eat. So then Lord Brahma appeared, and Lord Brahma explained, in the past you were a gopi and you were cursed, etc., etc., the story I told. And Lord Brahma said, you will marry Shankarchuda, who was Sudam. And he also explained that Sudam was attracted to you in Goloka, and you were both what's called Jati Smarana. Jati Smarana means you can both remember your past in Goloka Vrindavan. Mm. So Sudam also performed austerities as Shankarchuda to get Tulsi as his wife. And Sudam was the son of Kashyapa and Danu. And not the son of, he was the son of Ripa, let's see, his son, Damba was a descendant of Kashyapa and Danu, who had a son, Viprachiti, and their son was Damba. And Damba performed austerities to get Shankarchuda as a son. And Shankarchuda performed austerities, and Lord Brahma also appeared to him and said, you'll become invincible to all the demigods and you'll marry Tulsi. Lord Brahma benedicted him and gave him this amulet called Sarva Mangala Maya. Mm. And so Shankarchuda went to Tulsi and said to Tulsi, I want to marry you. And Tulsi said, don't you understand, it's not a good idea to get married. You should stay a brahmachari. Because she explained the nature of women. And she explained the nature of women in the mode of passion. And he said, it's only women in the mode of passion and ignorance, but you're transcendental. So they also talked about their past. You know, that's actually a very romantic thing, that you say, in the past life, we were this and we were that. Isn't it? Can you imagine, like, you meet, boy and girl meet, and they remember each other in the past lives? Nowadays, you have to go to a hypnotherapist to understand this. We charge for that. So, so then they got married. Lord Brahma said, you should marry by the Gandharva rite. That's an easy rite, very inexpensive. You just exchange garlands. You know, no guests. No pictures, you know. It's like we had, you know, all these pictures, but, you know, no video cameras or anything. Just exchange garlands. Very easy and cheap. No presents either. Yeah, that's the problem. So then they enjoyed together for 4,300,000 celestial years. It's a long time. But in the meantime, the Shankarchuda got complete control of all the heavenly planets and all the demigods. And so the demigods got a little upset. You know, they lost their homes. You would too. And they went, as they normally do, they went to Lord Brahma to complain about the whole situation. Lord Brahma went to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva went to Vaikuntha. And Lord Narayan explained everything to them. And Lord Narayan said, look, we're going to take care of this guy. Don't worry. And Lord Narayan gave a trident to Lord Shiva to kill Shankarchuda. And he explains to Lord Shiva that, you know, you should wait for the proper time, because I have to take this jewel away from Shankachuta, and also Tulsi's chastity has to be violated. And this way, Shankachuta will become vulnerable instead of invulnerable. That was his, what we call Achilles heel. Everyone knows what an Achilles heel is? Achilles was a mythological character from Greece. And his mother dipped him into this lake. And then any part of the water of that lake that touched his body would make his body invulnerable. That means not capable of being harmed. So she dipped him in. He was a little kid. And she held him by his foot, you know, the ankle, the heel. You know, I don't know how you hold a kid by the heel. Or, you know, somehow or other she did that. She put him in the water. And every part of the body touched the water except for the heel. So therefore he was vulnerable in the heel. That's called the Achilles heel. So Shankachuta's Achilles heel was that he could be killed only when his wife's chastity was violated, and he didn't have this like amulet, Sarva Mangalaya, from Lord Brahma gave him, but it actually belonged to Krishna. So anyway, so Lord Shiva got ready to attack Shankachuta, and he sends his envoy, because the demons, when they would attack, they were actually cultured. They would actually send an envoy, you know, we're going to attack you. They would warn. It wasn't just like nowadays the war, like in Syria, so many innocent people are involved in the war, and the government is attacking, and it's just a complete mess. The whole civilization is in a mess. In those days, it was just the men who would fight, not like the Israeli army. It's mostly women. So I mean, can you imagine that? You know, people want equality to be able to fight. I mean, if I was a woman, I wouldn't want to fight. Isn't it? I say, thank God I don't have to be drafted and join the army. Isn't it? Wouldn't you think? I would say, thank God I don't have to go to work. I could sit home and cook all day long. I'd be happy, you know, if I was a woman. No, I wouldn't be happy if I was a woman, sorry. I'd be happy. I'd be happy if I didn't have to do all those things. Sorry. You know, just like projecting myself in the situation. I'd be happy if I was a pure devotee. Okay. So, Krishna, you didn't hear that. So let's get to the story, because there's a lot of the story. So Shiva got ready to attack. He sent his envoy, and also there was Kartikeya, the Vasus, Aditya, Indra, Agni, Bhadrakali, who had a chariot and red paraphernalia. And Shankachuta went to Tulsi and said, we're going to fight. So he got her blessings, because the wife would generally bless the husband when the husband went off to fight. And he tells her, don't worry, in the future we'll be back with Radha and Krishna. You know, he was more detached about the whole situation than she was. So they prepared for the war. And Shankachuta was actually very respectful towards Lord Shiva. He bowed to him, and he bowed to Bhadrakali, and they blessed him. And he actually sort of chastised Lord Shiva. He said, don't favor the demigods. Then, to make a long story short, he fought with Kartikeya and Kali. Kali was stopped from killing him by a voice from the air saying that, you know, you have to wait until the proper procedure is followed. But she killed all the demons, and except for some of the ones that crawled out of her mouth while she was chewing them. Shoo! And then Lord Shiva was stopped from killing Shankachuta with the trident. He said, look, you have to wait until Tulsi's chastity is violated, and we take away this amulet. So what happens is that Krishna appears as an old Brahmin, and he begs the amulet from Shankachuta. Shankachuta is following the proper Vedic customs, giving things to the Brahmanas. That's like Karna, who gave up his, you know, invulnerability when Indra appeared as a Brahmana. Took away his earrings and everything like that. So then, after that happened, Krishna appeared as Shankachuti, took the form of Shankachuti, and violated Tulsi's chastity. Then Lord Shiva fired a trident, which is called Vijaya, which was as bright as 100 suns, 14,000 cubits long, 100 cubits wide. That's pretty big. And Shankachuta sees this coming. He's killed. His bones are tossed in the sea. And these bones become conches. And holy water offered in the conch is sacred, like a sacred river. It's offered to everyone except for Lord Shiva. When a conch is blown, it indicates Lakshmi is there, except when low-class people blow a conch, Lakshmi runs away. So if you're not following the regulated principles, don't blow conches, or else you become very poor. So then Sudama regained his original form with his jewels, his flute, his chariot, and the coward boys, and he flew back to Goloka. And Radha and Krishna were very happy to see him, and they put him on their little laps. But Tulsi remained in this world for a little while longer, and she discovered the deception, and she said, after Krishna, as Shankachuta, violated her chastity, she said, "Who are you? I'm going to curse you." And Lord Vishnu said, "I am Vishnu. You've been praying to have me as your husband." And Tulsi, you know, at that point, you know, this is all yoga maya, of course. It's not maha maya when someone is usually in love. Tulsi curses him and says, "You are like a stone. Therefore, you should become a stone. You are merciless, heartless." And that's how the Shalagram Shilas appeared. And of course, then Krishna appeared as a stone, and those are the Shalagram Shilas, and Tulsi took the form of the Tulsi tree, and which also was on the banks of the Gandaka River. So that's the story here of the Shalagram Shilas. So, any. Yeah. How do we know what?
That's it, the Govardhan Shila.
Because it comes from Govardhan.
No, but there is so many stones there.
And every single stone is actually Krishna in Govardhan. Every single stone is Krishna. And that, and of course, the question I thought you were going to ask is, how do you know which one is Radha? Because I have two. I worship one as Srimati Radharani. And so that's a question of the Bhav. Bhav means emotion. Of course, in the material world, we have this disease Bhav, Bhava Rog. But spiritually, we have some spiritual emotion. The Govardhan Shila is supposed to be worshipped by those who are, let us say, it's more a spontaneous worship. The Shalagram Shila is supposed to be worshipped with a mood of awe and reverence. It's more according to Vaidhi. Vaidhi means like, of course, you have to follow the rules and regulations if you're worshiping Govardhan too. But with Shalagram, it has to, you know, everything is very, very strict. It has to be done, you know, your offering has to be there, whatever. I mean, if you're not strict with Shalagram, it's all over for you. But with Govardhan, you have to be on the right platform. And if you're not on the right platform, you reach Sahaja. And it's done in a spontaneous way. Just like the way I worship my Govardhan Shilas is that when it's not, they don't have regulated offerings, except when I eat, they have to eat first. And when I take a glass of water, I give them a glass of water first. You understand? So it's more like a friendship type thing rather than like there's God. It has to be, there's my friend. But one has to be on the platform of being able to realize that. One hasn't realized that one shouldn't worship Govardhan. I mean, Lord Chaitanya's worship of Govardhan, like I mentioned before, was that he'd take Govardhan, put it to his heart, cry over Govardhan, smell it. You don't do that with a Shalagram Shila. Okay, on that happy note...